Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to Ringside Chaos, the professional wrestling discussion segment of the Bear of Texas podcast and Paint Train Pipe Bomb Productions. You all know who I am, but let's proudly welcome back the owner, founder, and creator of Paint Train Pipe Bomb Productions, Pipe Bomb Radio, New York City. Ladies and gentlemen, the master of mayhem himself, Ricky Litwinkiewicz. What's up, Ricky?
Oh, nothing much. Sitting here watching Mets baseball while recording the thing, and at this point they are losing 6-0 in the sixth inning.
Oh boy. And obviously today for NFL, well, ladies and gentlemen, if any of you here on the listen to this program, listen to my other show, Cowboys Talk, and you're curious to know what I have to say about the Cowboys getting their butts kicked by the Detroit Lions, just tune in, because in a couple of days the episode will be out. But enough about the Cowboys. Let's talk some professional wrestling. Ricky, you are here to talk to me and recap AEW's Wrestle Dream.
Yes. And all I'm going to say is that I've had this opinion for a while that I believe that like their booking and storylines were horrible. Mm-hmm. I think this pay-per-view kind of leveled that out for me.
In a good way or in a bad way?
In a bad way.
Okay.
Because to be honest, okay, the 0 hour had 3 matches on it, which I'm kind of glad that they did have fillers. I'm okay with the filler matches. However, you put in the television title on the 0 hour. Granted, yeah, it's the TV title. But Ring of Honor, since it was purchased from Mr. Khan, hasn't been as relevant as it usually is when they have matches like the TV title match. The 0 hour also had the Maximum Male Models versus the Acclaimed.
Somebody and made a surprise appearance, by the way.
And they also had Harley Cameron versus Anna Jay.
Yeah, well,
These matches really don't hype me up as much as I would think I would want for a 0 hour. But I'm going to tell you that the only match, which probably should have been the one that bled into the beginning of the pay-per-view, was the Acclaimed match versus the Maximum Male Models, or MXM, as they like to call them in AEW or Ring of Honor. And Brian Cage wins the television title, probably well-deserved because he hasn't had a singles title since his entire run after the FTW title that he had from Taz, which is now defunct. The Harley Cameron Anna Jay, Anna Jay wins.
Which obviously makes me happy because I'm a huge fan of Anna Jay. She actually recently did a promo. I think she said this ass fights back or kicks back. I mean, she said something like that, but it was a master promo. Anna Jay's been on fire recently. I mean, that successful spell she had in Japan. I mean, even Will Ospreay complimented her work. And to get a compliment from Will Ospreay, who, of course, a long and illustrious career in Japan, is huge. But I'm so proud of Anna Jay because I have defended her since she arrived at AEW. I've been laughed at. I've been ridiculed. No, I've been bullied for it, but I don't regret any of it because I've known from day one Anna Jay has potential. She went to Japan to hone her skill and her craft. She looks better than ever as a wrestler. Her promos are even better. The future is bright for Anna Jay, and I am so proud of her. If I could one day have her on this show, it would be a lifelong personal and career accomplishment.
Okay, but again, when I had mentioned booking in the beginning of this episode, this match was put together this week of the pay-per-view, and it, to me, was just a filler, waste of time, go to the bathroom before you get ready for pay-per-view match.
I mean, to be honest with you, Anna Jay should have been on the main card, not the pre-show, but that's just me defending Anna Jay. You know, that's just me going to the ends of the earth for her.
Yes, but it was also against Harley Cameron, who hasn't done anything really except for, again, be a space filler. So if I'm rating the 0 hour significance-wise, I'm probably you would get screamed at for it, but the TV championship probably would have ranked second in this little three-match lineup. The Acclaimed match was actually really, really good. It still keeps the Acclaimed up on the list, even though they're technically not a Ring of Honor team. They are AEW. So I can kind of say that. But to me, the 0 hour, like, if you're going to bring me something that's going to get me excited for the show. And it really didn't get me excited for the show.
Okay.
That's just the way I kind of look at it. I mean, you have the Acclaimed win. Great. Brian Cage wins. Great. Anna Jay wins. It's another win for her record. But give me some excitement to get me to go into this pay-per-view, because it was really almost like, let me take a nap before the pay-per-view starts.
Right. You know, and last thing I want to say about Anna Jay, as we know, coming off that huge thing in Japan, I mean, she's actually going to be competing for New Japan Pro Wrestling Fighting Spirit, and she's actually part of a number one contender's four-way match for the New Japan Strong Women's Championship. So, yeah, it's good to see great things happening, but I think AEW needs to, they really need to do better with Anna Jay, because she's got a lot of momentum going right now. And her career right now is going great. So come on, Tony Khan. But then again, as far as booking in the AEW women's division, I mean, that's been questionable since the beginning.
And the start of the pay-per-view was, I mean, all right, we 0 hours finished, right?
Right.
I'm sitting there, I'm getting to watch all of these matches that were somewhat planned in advance. The pay-per-view starts off with Jay White versus Adam Page, which this match was put together 2 weeks ago. Only because now Jay White's back, and they had a whole Adam Page thing going against Bullet Club Gold. Hurting the Gun Kids, like, it kind of killed me a little bit. Not gonna lie when I tell you, it killed me a little bit that this match was the leadoff match.
Well, a lot of people have been very upset because Jay White has been badly misused in AEW. I mean, wrestling fans, I'm not just talking about AEW fans, I'm talking about well-educated and passionate professional wrestling fans that basically bury this whole concept of tribalism that follow all the promotions. They have been very, very angry about the booking involving Jay White. Because much like Will Ospreay, Jay White, a tremendous and illustrious career overseas.
Yes, but you know what? This is the massive thing, okay? And this is where I go to the storyline setups for AEW, for me, is a load of shit. Okay?
Right.
Here's why. You've been booking Adam Page strong for the last few months. Then you get Jay White, who has been a heel the majority of his career, coming into this match now, face. This is where I find the problem, okay? Jay White is not a great face, nor will he ever be a good face.
Some wrestlers are just like that.
Jay White is a career heel.
And he's great at it.
And I understand you want to kind of start pushing Jay White. I can understand that. Should you have pushed him now, being back 2 weeks? No.
You got to build him.
Because right now, what you've done is you've taken a five-alarm fire that you've built in Adam Page, in Hangman, and you legitimately snuffed that out. This, I mean, granted, the observations of that Hangman's now gotten into this new role, like the new, like, psycho, enraged character, this is all fine and great. And you still have all of the kickback from the Swerve feud. It's great. But you shouldn't be pushing Jay White right now. You should be staying on the Hangman page. And you have Jay White win this match, which means now you're going to try to now push the anti-heel, so to speak, to go in toward the world title picture. I would have given Paige this win. Unfortunately, I guess I'm not the best booker on the planet, or seeing it that it should have been straight enough that Paige should have won because you had him white hot. And now all of a sudden, that's not happening. So right there off the bat, that's my first neg for the match. Am I going to say the match was bad? No. I got those. These guys, again, formerly from New Japan, they know how to do it. They've done it over there. They brought their style over to AEW. Leadoff match, probably like 7.9. I'm not going to give it exactly 8 out of 10. But it got the crowd going a little bit in the proper direction.
Okay. Very, very good, Ricky. Very good. All right. What do we got next?
Willow Nightingale versus Mariah May.
Well,
another match within the 2-week limit of WrestleDream being built. Now, mind you, WrestleDream was kind of being built even before the last pay-per-view. So again, another kind of filler match. And there is an ongoing theme with this pay-per-view, which I will fully shed light on. Mariah May is good for the title as of right now.
We do know that the feud with Toni Storm is going to resume. Now, Toni Storm was recently in Japan, and I think she's actually set to compete in the promotion in Mexico. She actually recently did a promo. You see that promo she did in her backyard in Florida?
She did, because she was supposed to be going to Mexico, and because of the lovely hurricanes that we both had, Milton and Helene, she was unable to leave her Floridian home to go to Mexico.
But did you see how she was when she did the promo? She was actually wet.
Soaked. She did that promo in the rain.
That's
props to Toni Storm. I'm loving the character change with that.
Yeah.
I'm glad they're kind of keeping it. To me, this is where I don't think this matchup was a great idea.
Right.
Because now you're putting Willow Nightingale on now a losing streak.
Which
a little
is
bit
bad, because Willow is a great wrestler and she's a well-established name.
But now you're doing this off the back ends of that huge feud that she had with Chris Stratlander. Okay?
Yeah.
Like, I think there are certain wrestlers that they can throw a little bit of a losing streak on without have them lose momentum, but this is Willow Nightingale.
Right.
You know, like, I don't think momentum sits on her side properly if you keep giving her a title shot and not knocking it out of the park with her.
Right.
So bright points is that, I mean, you really don't look at Mariah May as the most polished of the women's wrestlers in AEW, but she definitely holds her own. And she does show like the technical skills to be holding the title right now. My deal is that I think that like her using Toni Storm's moveset is a little upsetting. Let her get me something a little bit more different than hitting a Storm Zero in the match. Like, I think that's probably the best way to go. You got to get her a new moveset, because then when Toni Storm actually does come back, we'll be seeing the same old shit every time that they wrestle. And like, I'm kind of dead in the water with that. This probably would get maybe 7.5 on my scale at this point, because they really did tease Willow winning a lot. And
yeah, it's
like
sad.
Hurt them dropping the ball with that. Maybe, I mean, it's just placeholder till Storm gets back.
Right. Well, I should actually apologize to everybody, because we were supposed to have a third guest on the show. We were supposed to have Tony from the Great Grit Podcast, but unfortunately, something came up. But Tony, shout out to you, and you know, can't wait to have you on the show again. And Tony, hope everything's okay, and you come back whenever you're ready to go. The way you closed out is good, and obviously, like I said, as far as Mariah May goes, they're obviously preparing a major feud with Toni Storm. But again, Toni Storm's been in Japan, and she's getting ready to go to Mexico. But again, so... as you said, I mean, Mariah is much like Willow Nightingale, an established name. She has a history, you know, especially an extensive career in Japan. So, yeah. So I think, like, you know, they can't mess it up with Willow Nightingale. They sure as hell can't mess it up with Mariah May. But, you know, unfortunately, again, like I said, the booking in the women's division in AEW has just been questionable for so long. But, yeah.
This is where... I am not a fan of AEW's planning for shows.
Let's hear it.
So we show up with a really, really, in my opinion, probably one of the good technical matches of the night. And I mean only technical because of the participants in the match. And that would be the scapegoat, Jack Perry, versus Shibata.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to pronounce his first name. I've butchered it, practicing it. I'm not doing it. I'm just calling him Shibata. We're going from there.
See, just like you, I do not like butchering names of athletes. I mean, I get it somewhat hard to, but I just feel like that's inexcusable. And personally, I feel it's disrespectful. But yeah, so, I got you. These names are difficult to pronounce.
How do you make somebody still look really good, even though they're not going to be the one that's pretty much going to be the victor out of all of this? This was good storytelling. Shibata still looked really, really strong. Now, mind you, he was out for a while with injuries while wrestling in New Japan. I think it was over a decade that it had been before he was able to wrestle again or even visit the squared circle, so to speak. And I'm going to tell you, like, Shibata was definitely showing out during this. And Perry, again, like, being the sneaky little bastard that he is, you know, match ends up in Shibata having him in a sleeper or a choke. And Shibata not realizing that his shoulders were both on the mat. And he gets counted for a pin. This is all fine and great. You know, like, I'm okay. Shibata's still strong. Perry, obviously, the scapegoat. He escapes with a technically cheap win, in
well
a way.
Said. Well said.
But also at the same right, though, this is where I'm not a fan of how things go. Okay? Three participants that had absolutely nothing to do with this match all make appearances.
Who would that be?
Daniel Garcia comes in to make the save on Shibata.
Uh-huh.
Because Perry is now attacking him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was as of recent that Danny Garcia had said that if Shibata won, he wanted a TNT title shot. Obviously, now you look at Garcia moving into the picture with Jack Perry. Okay, this is all fine and good. Shibata's saved, you know. Everybody should be la-ti-da back to the locker room. And then all of a sudden, MJF's music appears on the Titantron or whatever, or the video board, or whatever you want to call it in AEW. And now you have MJF and Danny Garcia going at it. Now, mind you, MJF is just coming off of filming Happy Gilmore 2 and some other movie that he caught millions of dollars for. And he looks like a horse's ass in Happy Gilmore 2. Sneak preview. And you have MJF trying to cut a promo. Now, I thought the MJF-Daniel Garcia thing was done. MJF beat him. You know, they go on their separate ways, you know, because Garcia really doesn't have a contract at this point. And now you have these two knuckleheads in the ring. And I'm really waiting to see what MJF is going to say, which could have been a segment on Dynamite, could have been a segment on Rampage, could have been a segment on Collision, because, you know, that's probably where you should be having segments like this, on those shows, not on a major pay-per-view. And then all of a sudden, Here comes Adam Cole.
Baby.
And Adam Cole goes after MJF. MJF runs into the crowd like a horse's ass that he is, because he can't stand and fight with anybody. Daniel Garcia miraculously disappears after he got his butt beat by MJF. And there's Adam Cole in the ring running around. Now, I said there was a heel theme going on this show.
Mm-hmm.
I'll ask you this question, Alex.
Okay.
Who is supposed to be the head of the Undisputed Kingdom?
Adam Cole, baby.
Now, the Undisputed Kingdom is a face faction or a heel faction?
Technically heel, but I could have sworn a few days ago they did actually give a handshake to their opponents. At least Bennett and the other guy did. I forget his name. But technically, and, to answer your question, they're supposed to be a heel faction.
And Roddy Strong is part of the Undisputed Kingdom. And is he a face or is he a heel?
I don't even know. He's supposed to be a heel.
If he's in part of Undisputed Kingdom, then that should be making him a heel.
Right.
Here's where my brain, as a kind of purist of the professional wrestling world, how do you have a heel in a faction of heels return from injury as a face,
mm-hmm,
when MJF and Adam Cole, baby, were face? Well, MJF was face and Cole was a heel.
Right.
How all of a sudden are you bringing them in reverse?
So that makes no sense. It makes no sense, yeah. So that's why I was so confused with the Roddy Strong thing, because I can't have a straight answer with the whole thing. Just is so mind-twisting, because the feud after MJF lost the title, Adam Cole revealed himself as the devil, which set up a high-potential feud with MJF as the face and Cole as a heel. But of course, Cole had the injury, and MJF did come back and attack Cole, but then like that, so we figure when Cole would come back, the feud would resume. It seems that the feud is obviously going to resume, but as Ricky said, ladies and gentlemen, MJF is the heel. Adam Cole seems to be the babyface. It's not supposed to go like that.
Exactly. So that's where I kind of was like, yeah, you know.
It's bad reverse psychology, if that makes sense.
No. I call this bad booking, bad storyline, everything else.
Yeah.
Again, to the motif of the way AEW set up this pay-per-view.
Exactly. I mean, as much and as I love you, AEW, Ricky's not wrong, y'all. I still love AEW, but still, we got to tell the truth.
By the way, Ken Jeong is at the Dodger game. I just have to say that out loud.
You mean Mr. Chow?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's just a man.
Mr. Chow. Yep.
And it kind of I'm kind of glad, because he brings a segue into the next match.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go.
Because we have the triple threat match for the international championship, held by Will Ospreay versus Ricochet versus Takeshita.
Konosuke. That's what I just say. Konosuke or...
And...
Again, I don't like... I hate butchering the name, so I apologize if I butcher the name.
Takeshita is kind of the wild card here.
Oh, definitely.
Way.
Definitely.
Because I really would have loved to have just seen Ospreay and Ricochet.
Oh.
But they had to throw... You know, they had to throw in Takeshita. The only reason why... I think, again, 2 weeks prior, apparently there's like a 2 week threshold for them making a card for a pay-per-view. This drives me bananas, because now you bring in more characters, more time. The match was great. Do not get me wrong. The match was great.
Definitely.
Again, a lot of people will sit there and argue with the whole flippy-dippy bullshit. Remember where these three guys are from. Okay? They've all had time in New Japan. They've had all had time on the indies. Now you have them all together in AEW. And again, Ricochet was with Lucha Underground. They had him there. WWE had him for a while. So the flippy dippy shit, okay, fits with all three of these guys. You don't look at Takeshita as the flippy dippy guy, but he does flippy dippy moves. And granted, yeah, you might see some spots where you got poison ranas going on and guys are not selling it. It's part of the gimmick. It's part of the action. It keeps the flow of the match going. We're not sitting there watching a guy in a submission hold for 12 minutes and 37 seconds, waiting for him to grab the rope or hit the rope with his foot or whatever. Like, it's action. These what these guys are made to do. Okay?
Professional wrestling at its best.
But now, again, now you bring in idiots like Don Callis and his, I gotta have the neon green screwdriver every time I go out to the ring in his suit pocket. And then you bring out now Kyle Fletcher. And again, if I want story, I want the three guys to legitimately beat the crap out of each other.
Obviously.
I want, like I saw on Dynamite 2 weeks ago, I want to see Ricochet and I want to see Ospreay go at it, whether it's a decision or there's no decision. And Fletcher now gets involved. That'll be another storyline that takes Ospreay away from Ricochet because now he'll go after Kyle Fletcher. And then that'll probably leave Ricochet to go against Takeshita for the International Championship. And how will AEW screw that up? Takeshita won't have the title more than a month. Setting up another Ospreay Ricochet setup. Give me some time to let these storylines breathe.
Seriously.
But again, like, you kind of look at it and you're like, again, like, how do you have these storylines run so quick? And then kill them off so fast. You're like, you have Ricochet and Ospreay together. Leave them there for like 3 months. Let them have like a best 3 out of 5 or something.
Well, best of 7? Like, how about a best of 7? How about a win?
But you know what though? Like 3 months, you have 5 matches. Somebody wins 3 out of 5 matches. You have like a sudden death match or whatever. Like, give me that. Don't give me this, oh, we have Ospreay Ricochet for like a month. Not even a month. Give me that. Give me, I want to see that. I don't want to see freaking Fletcher versus Ospreay. I don't want to see Ricochet versus Takeshita. Because you know Takeshita's going to have freaking help all the time.
Right.
Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, yeah, hell, give me a World Series concept, for Ospreay and Ricochet. I mean, we saw the fantastic match they had in Japan. Oh, baby, but you're right. Now, the ending, I mean, as, you know, Callis doing that and then Ospreay about to perform the move, but then who gets in the ring and then attacks Ospreay and reveals his identity. Yeah, that starts another story, but again, the storylines have been a major problem with AEW, so who knows how that'll end up. But I think, you know, to your credit, based on how you explained it, you feel like the match, the ending of the match kind of seemed a little ruined.
It makes me want to gag a little bit.
A little bit. I mean, that's you being just, nice.
No, right? No, because this, the next little series we got going on.
Right.
And by the way, I'm actually gonna give the match, even though I'm not a fan of the ending, I'll give that 8.5.
Okay, that sounds
8.5 out of 10. I'll give it that because, again, it was action filled. Probably would have been a little bit higher if the finish were different.
And all three competitors: Ricochet, Ospreay, and Konosuke. Amazing talents, world-class professional wrestlers. And I still say with such conviction, Will Ospreay is the greatest wrestler alive today.
Now we get to the point of the show where you don't get up and just go to the bathroom. You go to the bathroom, you go to the concession stand, you go out to smoke, change the oil in your car. The list could go on and on of other things that could have been done with the next 25 minutes or so. Okay? Swerve returns. Now, obviously, storyline, they have MVP, Shelton Benjamin, and Swerve Strickland, and Prince Nana. Four guys that could talk on the mic.
Oh, without a doubt.
However, again, this is a segment that did not belong on the pay-per-view. I understand they're in Washington. Swerve is from there. You're going to run all of your big talent from the state through the pay-per-view. I can understand that. But when you have a segment with these particular four people and you don't drive the nail home by having Bobby Lee Lashley show up, yeah, you've wasted 12 minutes of my time. That was the problem with this segment. If you're not going to do it there to get a pop or to set up a feud, you've wasted 12 minutes of my time.
Can I ask you this?
What?
With Lashley not appearing in this, did they basically miss this? Did they basically squander a golden opportunity that comes once in a lifetime?
Definitely. Because when are you going to get a bigger pop from the crowd when you have somebody like Lashley and Swerve in the ring at the same time? If you wanted this pay-per-view to have a lot more significance, then definitely so you have Lashley show up. My question is, why? Why was he not there?
Well,
you've already pulled in Shelton Benjamin. You've already had MVP there for 3 weeks. Benjamin's there for 2 weeks. Give me Bobby Lashley.
Basically the Hurt Business, but this time make it work better. Now, would it work like this? You have Lashley, Benjamin, and MVP feuding with Swerve and Prince Nana? Or do you have Swerve enjoying them?
Swerve at this point would have to then go back faction. And if he's not 100%, even though he's medically cleared, have him get a faction again. I'm pretty sure there's two guys that they don't have in any of their storylines right now that they could have tag up with Swerve.
So he betrays Nana, joins MVP, Benjamin, and Lashley. And then basically they feud. Do they feud with the Embassy?
No, because you know what, though? Here's the big gimmick to it all, okay? So, Swerve doesn't turn on Nana. They stay together. Unless somewhere down the line, if Swerve is losing to the Hurt Syndicate, because I think that's what they're being called now, the Hurt Syndicate.
I'd rather go with, you know what? Syndicate's a better word. I think it's
then,
better.
Then maybe down the line, like Lashley convinces him, hey, Nana's not doing anything for you. Or you're by yourself and you can't beat the three of us, then I could see maybe a turn. But they kept that positive, and I kind of like Nana with Swerve because Swerve isn't always a great mouthpiece. He doesn't get sometimes doesn't get the fan pop by himself, and that's why Nana with him is good. Yeah, granted, he's selling coffee, and they made a joke about him selling weed to kids in the parking lot and things like that. You know, like they're trying to keep the character there. And exactly. I kind of like it because Swerve isn't exactly, I mean, he is the toughest son of a bitch in AEW right now. And that's even putting him over Mox. But yeah, I kind of like that gimmick. They need to keep that. They need to have something a little bit more fun with Swerve.
I agree.
But then the next few minutes of my life, wasted probably,
you'll never get back.
Is the 2 out of 3 match, 2 out of 3 falls match, with Hologram and the Beast Mortos. Now, again, here's where you had a guy getting a push, and you put him in against Hologram, whom wins the 2 out of 3. Hologram does win the 2 out of 3, And then they try to profess that he is still undefeated in AEW. I'm sorry to tell you that you deluded idiots who gave the announcers this fact that he's still undefeated. He got pinned in the second fall of this match. That counts as a loss. So he's 14-1 in matches. Okay? He's not 15-0 because he did get pinned during the match. That counts as a loss. But, as I said, Mortos has been booked extremely strong for a guy who's had a character change and a name change in a matter of a year.
He's a Lucha Underground 2 guy, I believe.
He used to be Black Taurus in TNA and in CMLL, I believe. I'm not sure. Don't spam on me if it was in AAA or CMLL. But he was Black Taurus. And he was also in with Rosemary and Decay in TNA about a year and a half ago. So now Black Taurus is Beast Mortos, and they were pushing him, and they make him lose in this. I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah,
at a pay-per-view, I would not have booked him against Hologram, and I probably, in my brain, would be like, you know what? The shine is off of Hologram. You've been running him on Ring of Honor. Stick his ass.
Right.
But they didn't. Because, again, the heel theme runs through the rest of this pay-per-view. Where I down believe to the final three matches. Because, four. I double-checked my notes. So now we have Darby Allin versus Brody King.
Oh, boy.
In a perfect world, this match is later in the card. Not where it is. The 2 out of 3 falls match, earlier in the card. Because I feel like that match took the air out of the crowd. This match brings it back. Darby Allin legit got his ass handed to him in this match. It's like me walking up to a midget. You're like, hey, midget. Here's your ass. Here's your ass. Here's your whole ass. All in one shot. Because Brody King is a beast.
Yeah.
I've always been a fan of Brody King, regardless of whether he was with the House of Black. But, like, he was phenomenal in Ring of Honor. One of the best big men to move in wrestling history. I'm not going to lie. He's up there. And again, it's the David versus Goliath. The whole total underdog story. I'm not going to lie when I tell you this. Allin squeaks out a win. But when has Darby Allin not gotten destroyed in a match and squeaks it out? I've seen a lot of people give this match a B. I give it more than a B. I would give it probably about 8-2, 8-3, because this one had stuff going on in it that I'd like to see in more matches. And for these two guys to go at each other and then Brody be the bigger man and shake hands at the end, I'm all good with that.
Could we possibly see a program, Brody King in an alliance with Darby Allin in the foreseeable future?
Brody King is still in House of Black, and I don't see how you could really maybe... I mean, it would be a very interesting story twist if, let's say, they can probably have Darby run with House of Black. He's not running with Sting anymore. Maybe bring him in. I mean, that would be a very interesting twist to AEW right now, having Darby run with House of Black. That would be very interesting. I mean, they're all dark, demented people who wear face paint. Why not?
So they're not. They're not heal anymore because I've not really heard much about House of Black as of late.
Well, again, you really don't have anything because there's no trios thing running with them right now.
But they're not like heal anymore.
I'm pretty sure they're heel, but back behind the curtain heel is the best way to put it right now.
Because what I
no storyline for them, and you just leave them as they be.
Was Darby Allin feuding with the House of Black? But
no, he wasn't. That's the thing. Like, this was a personal thing that went back ages that right. Darby was never able to beat Brody.
Right.
So this was kind of like the cap to that. Like, I can do it. It's done. The friendship is still there. We're just moving on with each other.
All right. But Brody King and Darby Allin, you know, definitely a nice ring to it. And as you said, the match did go well. But, yeah, I feel like, the match probably should have gone a little bit later. Especially because of, the caliber of it.
So I'm going to swing this a little bit because I think, the match order should have been different. I'm skipping one match because I want to get to this one here. it just so happens to be, again, Ring of Honor, Mark Briscoe versus Chris Jericho.
For the Ring of Honor world title.
Again, another match put together within 2 weeks. There is no longevity with any of these storylines at this point. This was pretty much to the one where you're cooking spaghetti and you throw a piece against the wall to see if it sticks. You know, that's how you can tell if it's cooked. They threw a shitload of spaghetti at the wall. And whatever they could come up with, they came up with. I'm on the fence right now of whether or not Jericho's career is in the crapper. Like, I really, really feel like this learning tree gimmick with Big Bill and the bounty hunter,
Brian Keith.
Like, it is just the way to get faces on TV. Like, he's not really done anything significant with this whole learning tree gimmick. And the tree that they put together was probably put together by, like, a preschooler. it is a horrible tree with a horrible apple on it. And the apple has a face. Like, have we really fallen to the depths of bad creative when running with Chris Jericho?
Yeah, and it's like, sad because, as everyone knows, Chris Jericho is a hero of mine. And, and to this day, when people say he can't work anymore and all that, I mean, I just stand up for the guy and say, no, he can still go well. He can't go as well as he used to, but I still think he can work good matches.
And his body looks like a saggy water balloon, for Christ's sake.
I mean, wear a t-shirt. 30 years.
But listen, there are guys that have been in the business just as long as him that don't look like saggy, wet noodles running around in the ring. Give me a break.
I mean, I want to see the Painmaker again, honestly. That's just selfish.
I want to see not a flabby Jericho. Like, he looks like he has saggy water balloon boobs. You're out on tour with Fozzy. You mean to tell me you can't find a gym or whatever and put yourself in better shape that you look like a walking saggy water balloon? And he couldn't do half his moveset against Briscoe. Come on. Enough is enough. Jericho needs to move into a managerial role or just be a mouthpiece, and that's it.
Or work behind the scenes.
Stop pushing Chris Jericho. Like, it's making the end of his career really, really sad. And then you have to make him pull the freaking Jay Briscoe card. Like, you couldn't write a better storyline for Mark Briscoe that you got to bring up a man who's dead. Do we not have enough of that shit with Christian calling out dead dads? Like, enough. The dead thing is fucking way played out. Leave it alone.
Like, it's basically stale and dry.
Like, the whole Jericho thing right now is stale and dry.
It's like basically like beating a dead horse, right?
I mean, I couldn't give this match anything more than a 7. Because I was just, like, I'm horrified that this match was on legitimately right before the main event. Give me a break.
I mean, you're not.
How do you not have a downer like that?
Like I said, it hurts me personally because everybody knows I love Chris Jericho. But, you know, lately, even though I still go to the ends of the earth to defend the guy, I mean, obviously, as far as him goes as a wrestler, you have to wonder. I mean, the dude is obviously in his mid-50s now. He's not the guy he used to be. But people are just pressuring me. They say, look, Alex, we get it. You respect him. You appreciate him. He's your hero. But you gotta understand or admit that he's not the guy that he used to be, which I do. But I just don't think that his matches are as bad as people like to say they are. I mean, even Bleacher Report actually said that this was probably Chris Jericho's best match of the year. I don't know if I agree with that.
Were they watching it through those drunk goggles like everybody else has been watching them through? Because I'm sorry. I like Chris Jericho. He's had a great career. He's in the dumper right now.
I mean,
Jericho, I guarantee you, if you somehow will hear this, yes, we have met quite a few times, and I cannot see you put yourself through this shit anymore. I'm sorry. I just can't. It's like fucking pushing 83-year-old Ric Flair through a fucking airport terminal for his supposedly, again, last career match, his retirement match. Come on, please stop. Stop. You are killing the legend of Chris Jericho. And it should have not been on before the main event. Should have not been on before the main event. This match here, however, should have been on before the main event. And that would be Private Party versus the Young Bucks. Because when I talked about the Ospreay Ricochet Takeshita match, this match, shit, could be a match of the year candidate. There was a lot of ups and downs in this match, a lot of moving parts. I'm so glad that there was no backstage, like, ringside shenanigans during this. I was a fan of having the other wrestlers in the crowd watching this match. But this match here, crap loads of energy. I think the result should have been different with Private Party winning. But, again, you got, like, this whole Elite Young Bucks VP thing going on. You don't want them to win, but rightfully so, Private Party should have won this.
Well, see, this reminds me. I'll never forget when AEW first got started in the fall about 5 years ago, when they set up the tournament to crown the inaugural AEW Tag Team Championship. The Young Bucks actually worked Private Party in that first round match. And if I remember correctly, Private Party went over in that match.
Yes, they did.
Which was actually a great match. It was a great match.
And there have been times after that where you don't get to see Private Party in a lot of high profile stuff.
I mean, they made the semifinals of that tournament. I forgot who they lost to.
But again, when I talk about push, okay? Private Party really has not gotten a push.
No.
Definitely after that title, that tournament.
Right. I mean, much like Santana or Ortiz, I feel like Private Party is another tag team that AEW management and creative shit the bet on.
Because I think they should have won the titles at least twice.
See, and the gimmick Private Party had during that time in the fall of 2019, I really loved it. I mean, some would say it's still the same. There's still Private Party. But I think it's the ring gear that I'm kind of talking about.
But you know what? Private Party brought back movesets that they haven't been using in a while. Okay? Like, the originality of Private Party for being in AEW for 5 years. Yeah. Quinn gets hurt a lot. You have Cassidy running by himself. He ran with the Hardy Boys. He ran with Matt Hardy. Like, Private Party's got to get their due at some point. Because if they end up losing Private Party, if they lose Private Party and they go and Private Party goes to a TNA, or you know what? I mean, you probably could throw them in frickin' WWE and they'd get pop and they might get more recognition than what they've gotten in AEW for 5.5 years.
Well, if they go to WWE, I think NXT would be the place for them to go, but. Now, the Young Bucks have been champions since that feud with Sting and Darby Allin. You know, I feel everybody's obviously, some would agree with you, they felt like the Private Party should have won the titles. If you ask me, if there's a team, realistically, that the Young Bucks would drop the belts to in the foreseeable future, obviously it would be FTR, considering the history, because of the trilogy. And I keep forgetting the record between the Young Bucks and the FTR, but... At least I can say every match that those two teams have had been bangers. But I really believe the Young Bucks, the team that'll drop the belts, dudes, it's very likely to be FTR. That's just what my gut feeling tells me, but I don't know.
So I gave that one 8.7.
Yeah.
8.7 out of 10. I really was a fan of it. I loved the energy.
Yeah.
Crowd tremendously into it. So yeah. I'm kind of like good on that point. The main event obviously was the huge story to it all.
Mm-hmm.
The war of attrition, you know, that kind of deal.
And we all knew Bryan Danielson wouldn't be champion for a long time, but quite frankly, he didn't need to be. I mean, for many months, I would say with my friend Tony from the Greg Earth podcast, and he would say too with conviction that Bryan Danielson is at a point of his career. He doesn't need another title run. Now, it's not bad if they give him one. He would just basically state, because again, he caught a lot of heat for it from some fans, and he had to basically, but he made it clear that he says it's good if they give him one, he just doesn't need one. He vindicated himself, rather. He said, I never said he doesn't deserve a title run, I said, he just doesn't need it. But that doesn't mean he doesn't deserve it.
My problem with this, okay? The writing was on the wall when they started this whole Moxley Danielson storyline. Because when you have a guy go out and do interviews like Bryan Danielson promoting Wrestle Dream, his home state, you know, again, and then you get stories coming out saying, yeah, I had no feeling in my right arm after that Okada match. The Okada match was 3 weeks ago. And you still have him going out and wrestling matches, tag team matches with Wheeler Yuta. Well, you have him wrestling other single. This is the guy you put the strap on for a reason. Swerve Strickland specifically said, if I lost the title to anybody, that was the guy you were losing it to. Okay? That's how much that means right now. But yet, you put a guy who you know is hurt and is still putting on 4.5 star matches, right? Because he doesn't quit. Obviously, you got to write him off.
Right.
They wrote him off on this one.
They did. They said, okay, to make it clear, this is the end of his, as a full-time wrestler. His full-time wrestling career is over. He'll probably still work a couple of matches here and there. He may make some appearances on a couple of independent shows. But basically to make it clear, as a full-time wrestler, his career is over. There's a lot of things he can do. He can train wrestlers. He can work in creative. You know, he can work backstage. There's lots of things that Mr. Danielson can do. But as far as him as a full-time wrestler, I think it's about time. He's done everything. He has succeeded in Japan, Ring of Honor, WWE, and in AEW. Yes, I think his spell at AEW was tremendous. So many great matches. He put a lot of wrestlers over. He did his job.
But you know what? Like even I think that the deeming Danielson to not be able to continue was the proper ending
right
to the match.
Because him being pinned, A choke, yes. Say that again?
A choke, yes.
Yes.
A pin, no.
But a pin, no. Now, some would say a pin, I mean, a pin probably would have, it would have obviously gotten Moxley over, but Moxley doesn't need to win by pinning Bryan Danielson, especially in the way it happened, because Moxley's a heel and obviously the leader of the Blackpool Combat Club.
But you know what? Is that even considered the Blackpool Combat Club?
I mean, Claudio's
in it. You really haven't seen the name in a while.
Right. I mean, it's the same stable, but maybe it's time to change the name. If they do, what do they call them? I don't know, but I don't know.
Well,
we'll just have to wait and see how things go. But again, to the point, yeah, the way the finish happened, I agree with it.
But AEW also posted on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call that lovely
social media
website.
No disrespect to Elon, it's still Twitter, brother.
They obviously have said that due to its graphic nature, they will not be posting the post-attack match on Bryan Danielson, which was him getting the plastic bag thrown over his head again. To me, like, you've done that gimmick once. Not a gimmick you should do again. Now with legit, I can understand if it was 95% adults in the building. It's not 95% adults.
No.
You have kids there. I'm normal or special needs. Like, that's not something, once we've seen it, we should not have seen that again.
Yeah, I mean, I would not be comfortable with my kids seeing something like that, because it would worry me, like, if I have two sons and then the older son does that to his little brother and I'm not there, yeah.
But now, again, like, you see the full attack, Yuta turns, because now, obviously, Danielson's not in the storylines anymore. So you have Yuta turn. Now that makes him a heel. Moxley, yeah. Heel, Yuta heel, Castagnoli,
Marina
heel.
I gotta tell you, whoever
Shafir heel.
I mean, whoever
Pac,
came up with the idea
heel.
To pair up Moxley and Marina Shafir. I mean, even Bleacher Report said that whoever came up with the idea to pair up Moxley and Marina Shafir deserves a raise. I agree.
But you know what, though, again, she's somebody that's not being used in the women's division. She was a lackey for a while. She was a lackey with, I can't remember her name.
Well, it's been said already. They were not doing anything with her anyway. So.
They weren't doing anything with her.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter who.
So Nyla Rose. She was a lackey with Nyla Rose and Vicky Guerrero.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you're not doing anything with her. Slide her into that role. Because she's a former UFC fighter, too. She's huge in MMA. Unfortunately, she's married to Roddy Strong. So they're still in the company together. But yeah, you know what? Like, that might work for that. They botched the beginning of the match. I don't know if a lot of people saw that. They botched the beginning by having Final Countdown play for 5 more minutes after they started interacting with each other. And we now get to see something that we really should have seen again earlier. The new faces of AEW. Darby Allin, face of the company. Orange Cassidy, face of the company. Losing cause, now face of the company. Private Party, you get them in there. You got to get a lot of the AEW originals back into the mix. This is the prototypical time for AEW to do that now. And to finish out my commentary for this show, okay, which got 8.2 overall, 8.2, they ranked this match a B. I give this a B plus, A minus. It was good storytelling in the match. Again, the finish leaves a lot to be desired. But you now have all these new faces that you can push. And with the exception of technically one title throughout AEW, all your champions are heels. Mox, heel. Mercedes Moné, heel. Mariah May, heel. Young Bucks, heels. International champion, Takeshita, heel. Brian Cage is not a face, heel. There's an ongoing theme going. AEW's champions, with the exception of Mark Briscoe, heel. How do you do that? Your entire company is run by heel champions. And if AEW doesn't flip the script fast, your product is going to get dry, it's going to get stale, and you're going to lose the opportunity to push the AEW originals to the forefront. With the, again, exception of Mariah May, the Young Bucks, that kind of excluded me a little bit.
Yeah, Konosuke.
Takeshita?
Yeah, Takeshita.
All of the champions are people you brought in from other country, other companies.
Right.
Moxley, WWE, right? Castagnoli, Pac are the trios champions. WWE, Mercedes Moné, WWE. Like, now's the opportunity to change shit up. You want to run heel champions for another month? Go ahead. But by the end of the year, you got to start flipping some of these titles.
And Moxley's going to be champion for months at least. I mean, I don't see him dropping the belt anytime soon.
I think they have to wait for the opportune time for them to take it out of the duffel bag and bring in a different title. If that's what they're going to do, and the whole Shane McMahon crap, that happens, AEW will die. Shane McMahon going into AEW is a dumb idea. Why they keep pushing it, I don't know. If you had Moxley win the title and you were still running this Shane McMahon deal, then Shane McMahon should have been there last night. Obviously, he's not there. When are you going to bring him in? At Full Gear? You're going to bring him in at Full Gear? That's not even your best pay-per-view out of all of them. Then what would be the point?
What could Shane McMahon possibly do with AEW as far as...
run with the WWE guys. Run with Moxley and Castagnoli and Pac. And Marina Shafir, she was in WWE as well. So you got, except for Wheeler Yuta, all of those guys are former WWE guys. You have McMahon run with them.
And he's the leader of the faction. It would make sense.
But overall, again, I gave this, 8-2?
Yeah.
On the scale? Okay. The storyline sucked. You jammed matches in with us 2 weeks prior to the pay-per-view, and your order of pay-per-view, you need better people behind the scenes because they're not doing it for you. They are not doing it for you. You're not getting the pops at the right time. You're not getting your bathroom breaks at the proper time. Like, there really needed to be some roulette going with this pay-per-view. Not horrible, but the AEW pay-per-views run too long. And you lose interest fast if you don't have the proper pop and the proper action in the matches. I'm sorry. They ran, eight main card, 3 0-hour? Yeah, 11 matches is enough.
Right.
And if you're going to start it at 7 instead of 8.
Right.
So people are not going to go and not losing a Saturday night and having a pay-per-view end at 12 o'clock. Enough of that shit. Like, I'm glad they made it a Saturday for a change, but still, from 7 to 12, 5 hours is almost like watching old school WrestleMania when they tried to jam so many matches down our throat. Man, that sucked. Work.
That does suck indeed. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is actually going to wrap up our discussion of AEW Wrestle Dream. Ricky, why don't you take the time to tell everybody about Pipe Bomb Radio New York City?
Oh, Pipe Bomb Radio NYC. Tuesdays and Fridays, currently from 3 to 5 or 3 to 6 on, I did say Tuesdays and Fridays, on TikTok or the app Kick, K-I-C-K. Yours truly, and that bearded beast over there, run Pipe Bomb Radio. We usually have Lars the Viking on. We've got music. We've got talk. We've got fun and entertainment. And the future of 6ix9ine Radio coming as soon as well. You'll get to be able to hear everything on there. There are other future projects coming up, but stay tuned because the Bear Man over there, that gentleman right there, he will kick it to you hardcore style.
Mm-hmm. And ladies and gentlemen, as always, you can find Ringside Chaos wherever you get your podcast. So hit that subscribe button, hit that notification bell. That way, Ricky and I know for sure you will not be missing out on any exciting upcoming content. And again, catch us on Pipe Bomb Radio New York City on Tuesdays and Fridays. Ricky, thank you so much. Let's do this again soon, sir.
Definitely. Definitely, definitely.
All right, everybody have a good night and God bless.
This message comes from BetterHelp. Can you think of a time when you didn't feel like you could be yourself, like you were hiding behind a mask? BetterHelp online therapy is convenient, flexible, and can help you learn to be your authentic self so you can stop hiding. Because masks should be for Halloween fun, not for your emotions. Take off the mask with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.